Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, YouTube, hi. You can feel it in the air. And it's you can feel the mana. You can feel things moving in the right direction. We're going to pick it up, Nikias, because it's time to hoop it up.
It is time to hoop it up. Very proud to announce that basketball discussion is cool again. Anyway, very excited to talk some hoop with you today, Steve. Going to bounce around the league as we always do. We'll start basic. Steve, who are some teams that have caught your eye as of late?
Before we get to some teams that have caught my eye of late, you know what else has caught my eye? March Madness. And of course, the brackets are going to come out. Tournament's going to be great. Very excited to watch the women's tournament. Just want to throw that out there. Going to be real hoops. But it is also just time for people to be mad at their teams or or that one player or someone else's team or go on fraud alert. It's that time of year. Do you smell it, Nikias? Do you smell it in the air?
I can smell the frustration coming from fan bases.
Turn the heat up on those takes, baby. Playoffs are right around the corner. We've got teams with enough wins to be great and teams with not enough wins who just can't get there, but then they win. So it's like, hey, maybe. And then it's like, oh, actually, no, they're bad. And then, because they ended up playing each other. We've got weird results all over the place where Cleveland looks like one thing, then they look like the other thing the next night. Hey, you out there, set the table for those I told you so's. Go ahead and lay it out right now.
It's going
to
happen.
You know, do we realize, Nikias, that teams are going to lose games they should win and win games they should lose?
Just the season.
Do we take the totality of what a team has done during the regular season, the parts that make them great, the things they struggle with, the improvement they've made, the other team that is, you know, their job to also try and win a game? Do we put that into that? Or we go, takes, baby?
We here for the takes, big dog.
Okay, all right. Well, let's take off and talk about the Boston Celtics, huh?
That's a new team added to the pod discussion. What have they done?
Five-game winning streak. So the Celtics just keep on winning. Since last week's episode dropped on YouTube, by the way, if you are watching on YouTube, you should go ahead and click that like button, go ahead and comment, share it with a friend. I'm missing a thing, but do that other thing I forgot. Jason Tatum, 14 of 30 from three over his last three games. He is shooting 49.3% from three in the month of March on 8.3 attempts. He is up to 39.1% on pull-up threes post-All-Star break. He was at 34 pre-All-Star break. He's also shooting 46.3% on above-the-break threes post-All-Star break. Any thoughts?
It is very cool that the pull-up is coming back, as I just had a whole thing about his drives and what they've looked like as of late, as the drives have been super good this season. So it's fun that we just cannot get both of those things happening at the same time for an extended stretch.
I fully enjoy the fact that we just get the Jason Tatum rant and he immediately becomes Jason Makeham. And this is what the third year this has happened. So you love to see that. Hat tip to Jaylen Brown, averaging 29.6 in March, shooting 51% from the field. That's on 23 attempts, Nikias. 39 from three, five rebounds, 3.9 assists. He's doing good. Al Horford.
The knees are thawing out.
Ooh, Al Horford demon time in the playoffs is the thing. But you watch that Phoenix game, some of those switches looked a little different. Some of the coverage is a little different. Some of those slips look a little different. It was like, oh yeah, it's that time of year. Has he just officially taken the throne from Paul Millsap as far as like knee thawing out Hall of Fame?
Probably, yeah. Okay. But this is why you bring in Kristaps and you add extra reinforcements from there in the front court. Let's not play Al 31 minutes a game through the first 3 months of the season. Let's bring him along slowly, bring him off the bench. And as we get closer to March and, you know, eventually get to April and get to the playoffs, let's ramp it up. We'll have him in some closing lineups necessary. If you want to give Kristaps a break and let Al start now, we can do that. Because Al just fills all of the gaps for you offensively.
I'm very excited to see what he, Drew Holiday, and Derek White are going to do defensively in the playoffs. That seems very fun. The law firm of Horford and Horford doing things together. Or should I say Xavier Tillman and Al Horford doing things together?
Look, we got that. I'm 37. We got the Anna Horford tweet. Like, I can't tell which one is which. I was like, oh, no.
Was she wrong, though? Anyways. And then salute to Sam Hauser. Made 10 threes in 22 minutes and 49 seconds. The lowest amount of time for an NBA player to hit 10 or more threes. And then, unfortunately, his ankle just decided to just stop working. Or else he's gonna get that record.
Probably. And he was cooking. As someone that was, like, watching that game, I made it a half. And I was like, okay. Let's see what's going on in Magic Raptors. I've committed to the bit. Let me see what's going on here. It was like 66-37 mid-second. I was like, okay, man. Like, I figured Boston would win, so I really want to just check back in on the Wizards guys, see who's doing what, all the good stuff. But I was like, okay, that's enough of that. Shout out Sam Hauser.
Can I ask you a brief question?
What you got?
Is March when you just really dive into, like, the sicko portion of it? To where, like, you know, we talk about these teams and these games you should win, but you have these teams that have guys who haven't had some of these opportunities, and they get a little bit clearer runway. And, like, you haven't prepared for this team full of guys that are now playing in certain roles. You tend to enjoy those teams a lot more in March. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Like, I generally just like to check in on, I want to watch everyone. And so, like, I earnestly mean I want to watch everyone. But especially as we get to, you know, this portion of the season, everyone's gearing up for the playoffs. We are also gearing up for the playoffs. That's crazy. But we are also gearing up for the playoffs. And I recognize that's just where the overall conversation is going to go. And so before then, let me salute some of these, like, post All-Star breakouts. And here's an interesting rotation player who, like, those numbers might be like 85% real, but they've shown enough to where they can actually factor into the rotation next season. Like, I'd want to try to be ahead on some of those. And so, yeah, like, I enjoy tapping into those, except when it turns into, again, 66-37 early on. It's like, okay, well.
That's fine. If we have more time, I would explain the cap there, because I haven't seen a non-GG or Vince Williams Grizz comment in about 3 months. But we'll keep it moving.
Oh, okay.
We'll keep it moving. Nikias, you know who I want to talk about today?
Who would you like to talk about?
I would like to circle back to the New York Knicks.
I hear a very important forward is back for them.
Ah, OG is back. Wowzers. It's interesting how quickly things can change. Last week we talked about the Knicks and that fun real hoop slugfest against the Sixers. And, you know, one of my questions was trying to figure out how would they navigate this stretch. And then, hey, here's OG Anunoby back in the lineup. And, hey, here's three straight wins, which is important to kick off, you know, two of those to kick off a West Coast swing. So by the time you see this, they will have played the Golden State Warriors. So, sorry that happened. Just, yeah, it's fine. Because last time they played Golden State, Steph had, what, 31, 11 rebounds and 8 three-pointers. So anything that happened. Two things that stood out to me here, Nikias.
Okay.
Jalen Brunson is very, very, very good at basketball. 45 points against Portland, 42 against Sacramento. He is the fourth Knick in franchise history to have 40 or more points in consecutive games. Can you name the other three, Nikias?
Ooh. For the interest of time, I'm going to let you give the answer.
Yes. Bernard King, Patrick Ewing, Carmelo Anthony. Jalen Brunson also tied with De'Aaron Fox at fourth for most 40-plus point games this season with 7. Quick side note, I do find it extremely funny that Joel Embiid is still second on that list with 9.
That's
a salute to how that man was cooking. The other part that I found interesting, that the Knicks had 32 assists in their 106-79 victory over the Sixers. In their two wins against Portland and Sacramento, they had a combined 35.
It is time to cook.
Tale of two teams, but part of that dives into where this is an important stretch, and part of it makes my mind think about what they look like in a playoff context. Obviously, Julius Randle changes the math even more for them. But with OG back, I think it's safe to kind of look back and take a look at some things. Nikias, the Knicks are 7th in defensive rating for the year. Post All-Star break, according to NBA.com, who does account for garbage time, they're 1st in defensive rating. Over the last five... No. Over the last 5 games, they have held their opponents under 100 in each of them. 3 straight games, they held someone under 80. The Knicks are locking up. Now, I do find this a little funny because I can smell the praise. You know, it's March. You can feel it. You can feel that energy. A lot of issues were had with the Knicks defense, and it was too rigid, or the scheme was outdated. Now they have a few days to hold the banner up for a defense in a league where no defense is played. I love seeing that clip every 2 to 3 business days. It's very fun. Or we're done with the 90s or whatever y'all talking about. Here's the thing about the Knicks defense. Activity, rotations, screen navigation, effort. When they are humming, you see it. When they have OG out there with Dante DiVincenzo, with Josh Hart, they are all switchable. And I point to that Kings game to where now you could think in a playoff context, this could get really fun. It's not OG on Fox right away. It's Dante. Mm-hmm. You handle the bulk of this matchup. I will handle the size of Harrison Barnes, but also I will be on the weak side. You put Jalen Brunson on Kevin Huerter. The Kings decide, hey, you know what? We'd like to attack you, Jalen Brunson. Knicks say, like, fine, we'll switch. And they want to make sure, you know, because the game is not just to get a switch to attack one-on-one. We've seen more teams get these switches for these matchups, and now they have their big screen. You know, we saw it all day in the Dallas-Denver game with Jamal Murray and Luka. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, there's two differences right here. Isaiah Hartenstein can be a little bit more active in pick and roll. He can be a little bit closer to the level. He can put two on the ball just for a heartbeat. The other reason he can do that, OG Anunoby is on the weak side helping in the paint. And so when you have that kind of rotation and size and length, it can help your defense. It can bolster that scheme. It can make it stronger. So I think that's been a big plus for them. And when they're able to get stops, it's going to give their offense wiggle room to figure things out. It's going to allow them to get out in transition. It's not going to be overpowering. You know, I don't have a number to be like, nope, the Knicks are this in transition. But I know those nights where the defense is able to hang around and be disruptive, they are now able to get into a better flow offensively. The Jalen Brunson two on the ball portion has been interesting because it's felt like, hey, we need to figure this out. And so it's felt like a lot more pick and roll, which has been fine. I've been okay with like them moving Jalen Brunson around the court, letting him come off staggers or screens or loops. And now we get to pick and roll and we are able to play out of it. OG Anunoby's actually done a really good job of driving closeouts when teams are in rotation. And that's been fun to watch. But I don't know if the Knicks want to just spam that all the time. How much is that going to help them in the playoffs? Especially because, you know, you're just handing teams film of that in those actions. So that's a thought in my head. The other portion I wanted to mention to Kaius, I'm kind of into the Knicks depth right now. And I think one thing about it, they have more lineup combinations, they have more versatility, but with their roster, how many of those guys do you think Tibbs really trusts right now?
We got a smooth 5-6.
Oh, dang. I was going to go pretty much everyone but Alec Burks right now. And maybe Bogey. They got to figure out the Bogey portion.
I say, are we sure?
No, like, I don't know if he's there yet. I think he knows Bogey can help, but also, like, hey, Josh Hart, go ahead and do the defense thing. But being able to now flow into pressures at the five, I think, is important. Being able to have, you know, Bogey out there with Dante and McBride. There's just different combinations they have. So I'm intrigued by the Knicks going forward. Boy, I'll tell you one thing. Just looking at the standings right now, they're 2 games out of 3rd. They're a half game up on Orlando for 5. A New York-Orlando series would be either real hoops or the series that people don't want to talk about.
It will probably be more of the latter because as I find, you know, very anecdotal, it's why isn't defense being played anymore? Insert player from the 80s or 90s with average 60, et cetera, et cetera. Then you get the Knicks who defend like this and the Orlando Magic, which I'll very quickly note, if we do factor out garbage time with clean the glass, the Orlando Magic barely have a better defensive rating than New York Knicks post All-Star break. So I'll sprinkle that in. But you get these two elite defenses. It's like, nah, this is ugly. This is slow. Where are the buckets? Y'all want defense or not? Like, what's the bid? I don't understand.
I will once again ask, are you prepared for the New York Knicks to treat Orlando like they treated Cleveland last year? Because they did it after we recorded that pod.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to have to get more ready. I guess we'll see. Very quickly on the OG Anunoby front, then I had a question for you. So one, OG's been back for 3 games. three wins for the Knicks. They have won the OG minutes in those three games by 45 points. That seems pretty darn good. He seems pretty valuable. And as you were talking about them being able to put Hartenstein at the level and have an OG on the back end there, like there was a possession in that Kings game. They slip a pass into Domantas Sabonis. Here's OG Anunoby. And normally Sabonis is just putting you underneath the basket. Didn't quite do that to OG. That position. That's a very strong wing. So just having that value, even if he isn't going to get you the shot blocking numbers, just having someone that can hold up the opposing center and then either contest or just get out of there, depending on where the center catches the ball. Very valuable. They're able to rotate well out of that. So really impressive stuff for the Knicks. As you brought up the assist number in particular, how much of that is, do you think, the Knicks having to kind of play out of two? And then it's maybe like a secondary pass from there that kind of kills the assist opportunity, but they're still moving the ball well. Just, I guess, in general, when they've gotten to, how have you felt about the overall movement when they've gotten that?
What movement? The spacing's been really good. There's been occasional movement between like Dante and Josh Hart to exchange to where Dante's one pass away. I feel like they've tried to hammer that home recently. But what movement do you mean? Are you talking about cutting?
Cutting, but I guess I mostly meant just general ball movement.
I think they've done a good job of getting off of it early and trying to swing and force teams to be in rotation. I think the tricky part is balancing when to take a shot and when to drive at times. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have the, okay, rotate, contested three. And then sometimes you have the swing, drive, oh, there's no one else to kick to type possessions. Mm-hmm. Or they just get late in the clock. You know, or they just don't finish near the rim. So it's not necessarily something where I'm like, I don't think they can do it. Mm-hmm. It's more just like, okay, how are they going to alternate? Because you also have the, you know, possessions going back to the Kings game where Sabonis is at the level, it's two on the ball, but then he goes to drop. And now you're anticipating two on the ball. So now it's really just Jalen Brunson cooking, which, again, he's been cooking. Cool. So it's not the end of the world, but now you're not necessarily toggled in the same way.
Mm. Okay, just wanted to see where you were on that. Now, I guess it's circling back to the trust point. I would imagine he trusts Jalen, Dante, Josh Hart, OG, Hartenstein. I think he likes Precious. And then once you get Julius Randle back, that's seven. Who do you think he trusts more right now? I guess the answer is just Deuce McBride at this point, huh? I was going to say Deuce or Boyan. Or I guess Deuce or either of the new additions.
Once he played that man 46 and 47 minutes, he became on that list for me.
Yeah. So I guess it's like full strength. It's like it's closer to eight. I just kind of said six off rip. But, you know, factoring Julius coming back and stuff. I would like for them to find a little bit more for Boyan, but it's getting later in the season. So we will see.
I think this is a better context for him. I'm going to keep batting that drum home. I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I think this is a better context for him. With Julius, is probably the best context for him, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. But this should be all right. I think they'll move in the right direction. Shouldn't be a huge problem. If you're the Knicks, do you want the three seed? Are you okay with the four and Boston come see us in the second round?
I do still think you maximize the path by getting to three. Because Boston has just been so good. I do feel like they match up well with Boston. Like, I think that barring, like, somebody having absurd injury bad luck, I think that series goes six or seven. I would probably pick Boston, to be transparent, but, like, I think that series goes six or seven. I do think they match up well. But easier path to the conference finals would still probably be getting a three or two and kind of working that side of the bracket. You have any other Knicks thoughts or any other shouts that you wanted to give?
No, man. Let's go ahead and blast off, bud.
Okay. As you mentioned up top, the Boston Celtics, five-game winning streak that is tied for the longest active win streak in the NBA as of recording. We will see what happens with the Monday night slate of games. So thank you or I'm sorry, depending on how those games go. Also, winners of five straight are your Houston Rockets. And as we look at the standings real quick, 32-35 as of recording. They're only 3.5 back of the Lakers. Like, I don't know how much you want to believe on that front. The Lakers have lost their last two. The Lakers defense has fallen off of a cliff post All-Star break. It's a small enough deficit to where you at least got to keep eyes on it. I would just I'm just saying, it's 3.5 and the Rockets are winning games right now. But winners are 5 straight. If you want to narrow it down, they've won their last streak since Alperen Şengün suffered his really bad injury. The strength of opponent, they were on the road against the Spurs. They beat the Wizards. And they beat the Cavs and honestly ran the Cavs off the court on Saturday. And like that was where I was like, hey, wait a minute. Like I've been having fun, like either watching full games or just kind of catching segments of Rockets games. Like, oh, this looks pretty good. They're playing smaller. Tempo feels better. Switching all over the place. Jock Landale looks like a functional rotation piece. Looks more closer to what I thought he was going to be this year over the recent stretch than what it's been for most of the year. Because, buddy, it was bad. It was bad. He actually looks functional. But watching that Cleveland game was where I was like, oh, they are really putting this together. Like, the offense just feels better. Jalen Green running pick and roll with Jabari, running it with Amen Thompson, Fred VanVleet running ball screens. It just felt like everyone was making quicker decisions with the ball and also just shooting the leather off of it, which helps. And then defensively, forcing all sorts of turnovers. Like, I feel like Amen had like 3 or 4 runouts in that first half alone. It's like, oh, they are really getting after it. And if this is what this unit can look like, I am very much in on this. But we will circle back quickly to Jalen Green. Like, we just talked about him on the last pod, so I don't want to belabor the point too much. But I've just been so impressed with how quickly he's making decisions these days and how quickly he's diagnosing the coverages in front of him. Yeah, you know, I wonder where we have heard this before. But, like, it's been funny to, like, think about the progression of Jalen Green throughout his career where it's, I'm going to come off this ball screen, I'm going to snake it every time and see what we got, which not inherently a bad thing. But the best ball handlers, they're snaking pick and rolls with a reason. There is a cat and mouse with the big. If that guy creeps up, I can now throw a lob or skip it to the corner if that guy sinks down. If he's playing too far back, I can get to a comfortable mid-range shot, et cetera. And it felt like Jalen was snaking it to read, but like wasn't processing it as quickly as he could. And ultimately, it felt like him trying to slow down for the sake of slowing down. And you don't necessarily want to do that when you also throw in some tempo stuff. And, you know, now a conversation we had earlier this year, Jalen Green just getting the defender on his back, putting the defender in jail and kind of slow playing it there, which, again, not inherently bad. But if you're slowing down for the sake of slowing down versus slowing down for the sake of reading and putting a defense in a bind, what are you really doing? And it's felt like over this recent stretch, there has been a much better balance of this is what I'm being presented with. This is what I'm going to do. If I run a high pick and roll and they're trying to ice it and we got like Jared Allen at the level, if I don't have anything, hey, there's Jabari Smith on the pop. I'm going to get it to him, and I'm going to let my teammates play out of that. Like, there was a possession early in the first quarter of that game where that situation happened on the right sideline. Gets it to Jabari. Jabari drives against Jared Allen. Dylan Brooks eventually gets the ball, drives against Donovan Mitchell. He knocks down like a turnaround jumper late in the clock. It's like, okay, it's not a sexy play. It's not a highlight. That is Jalen recognizing, I got two. Let me get it to him. Let's play some advantage basketball. And even if that didn't end in a pure advantage, they got points out of it. Whereas Jalen could have done too much. Could have tried a more aggressive pass than necessary. Could have been a turnover. Just gets off of it. And like, honestly, if you looked at the last 3 games in particular, like 2 of my favorite plays from Jalen Green have been non-shooting fouls for him. Like, there was a play against Cleveland where they put late in the quarter, Tristan Thompson's in. They try to put 2 on the ball against him. He just recognizes, okay, I don't really have a pass. I can just beat this dude off the dribble. Drives to his left, gets leverage on Tristan Thompson. It's a foul. Couldn't get it. And then there was a play against San Antonio in the second quarter, I want to say. They're going into Spain pick and roll. Jock Landale setting the screen. Victor Wembanyama creeping up. He takes a bad angle to try to cut off Jalen. Jalen goes between his legs and splits the pick and roll and draws a foul on Wemby because he's just reaching at that point. And I'm just like, yo, that's all you need from Jalen Green. See what's in front of you. Make the right play. Get off of it if necessary. Pick your spots in terms of your aggression. It's cool. And then with more of the conservative stuff, if it's dropped, I have a shot. I can just do this. If it's a switch, I can boogie against you. Or if there's a pocket against the switch, I can just pull straight up. Like, that's all we've been waiting for with Jalen Green. So to see that more consistently, that's been a bright spot for me. In addition to, he's just making well over 40% of his threes as of late. So like, that's obviously helpful, but the process feels better with him. I think Fred VanVleet, What you got? You seem very...
Rockets fans, clip this portion. Clip that portion so you can do your Jalen Green thing. No one said it before. Keep going.
I'm not saying no one said it. I've been on the pod with a guy that's been talking about Jalen Green. So, hey, don't put me in that camp, Steve. Jalen. But zooming out, like I think Fred VanVleet's obviously been important on both ends. Like the drives have been, they've been interesting. I think he's making good decisions as a passer. The finishing remains kind of a question mark with him, but he is getting downhill. And ultimately, the defenses have felt more tilted against Houston with the smaller group anyway. So like the decisions have been easier for him. He's also knocking down a bunch of shots from deep. So when they do play him off ball and Jalen is handling or Amen is handling or whoever else, like he does provide that obvious value there. Also provides value as an on-ball screener or a go screener. So if any of those ball handler wants to run, you can still have Fred in the action. I remain impressed with what Jabari's been able to do this year. Like the shot is just here. In addition to all the different matchups he's had to take on defensively, I am keeping an eye on Houston with this smaller group and I'll get into some of the lineup numbers shortly, but Jabari can switch against just about everyone and you don't feel awful about it, which is a positive to him and a credit to how good he is defensively already. When he does switch, they are very small on the back end. And while I love Amen flying in for blocks or whatever the case may be, in terms of like pure rim protection, that gets a little bit dicey. And so like that's something to keep an eye on in terms of like how often they can actually run this unit, especially once Şengün comes back either later this year or more realistically next season. I think Ime's probably taken this sample as something to look at, like, okay, how often can we close with this group? Or just throughout the duration of a game, how often can we get to it? I think he's getting a very valuable sample with that. But either way, Jabari's been very good. Amen setting screens has been fun. Like, similar conversation to what we had about Asar in Detroit. Before this recent three-game stretch, Amen Thompson had set 63 on-ball screens. Over his last three games, he has set 21. He set a season-high 9 against San Antonio, which made sense because Wimby got the matchup, let him roam around, all the good stuff. But like, just he's not getting a whole bunch of lobs yet. I do wish like some of the ball handlers would hit him on those slips, at least try it, because like he is open on those. So it hasn't been like a high volume. He's catching 3 lobs a game beat yet with him as a roller. But like just kind of watching the form with him as a screener, like he seems to have the footwork down. He's slipping out of there quickly, giving yourself a catch. You know, so he's doing that stuff. And then with everything else, really fun connector in the half court. Shooting remains a question mark, but we knew that. Defensively, feisty on ball, can make ridiculous plays off the ball. I'm really enjoying this Amen stretch from him. I've just really enjoyed the Rockets as of late.
Interesting. Very interesting. Good stuff. Well done, Nikias. I think to your Jalen Green point, just quick decisions, reading the defense, making the right plays, making the right reads. Obviously, it does appear when he makes shots, things do feel better. But to respond in the month of March with 24 a night, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 49% from the field, 37 from 3 on volume, that ain't bad considering where he was. And I think to your point, to your credit, when you talk about Fred VanVleet, he can always still be Fred VanVleet. And he can play within tempo. So if they play a little bit quicker, it's not like you're just ending things for Fred. It feels like the Rockets are evolving and starting to find their way as far as what they want to continue to build towards, which mm-hmm. I think is important. You know, I think you took a team, you wanted to make sure you got X, Y, and Z down. It was something I was concerned with the whole season. Like, I understand why we're kind of going this route, being a little bit more decisive, a little bit more deliberate at times, tempo-wise. Mm-hmm. But I was worried as the league would catch on to, okay, we just need to defend that, and now what are y'all going to do? And mm-hmm. now you see them flowing into different options, using their personnel in different ways. Thompson as a screener has been fun. I think some of the elbow action, whether it's with Jabari or Amen, has been fun. I think it's one of those things where we know what Şengün can bring to the table. We know what we can do around him. We also have this type of lineup. And if we add more pieces, we can go into this for certain stretches or end a quarter with this, start a quarter with this, close a game with that if we need to. And mm-hmm. I think that would be a positive overall. You know, you want to have more duality as a team. I think to your Jabari defense point, it's been interesting to watch not just the switching and the activity on those, but also when he's guarding a big off a switch and the timing on, you know, his contests at the rim. That's been positive to see. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see Dylan Brooks getting back to making shots. I think that's been fun. And then the off-ball stuff from Jalen Green, too, has popped a little bit as far as his timing relocating. It's been mm-hmm. fun. That's been fun. Did you know during this 5-game win streak, Amen Thompson, 14.7 rebounds, shooting 72% from the field.
That's pretty darn good. Yeah. Yeah. Also crushing the offensive glass as well. So, again, you can't stash small guards on him. Like, I think it has shifted, especially with this lineup. So I think that is driving it more than anything. But you got to stash bigs on him if you're going to stash anyone on him. Like, I just think he's already made stash a guard that we don't want to defend actions on Amen Thompson is a viable strategy moving forward. He's too willing of a screener. And again, like, on the technical side, he's already a good screener, in my opinion. But beyond that, he will just crush you and generate a bunch of extra possessions if you put a small guy on him. And just very quickly on the lineup front, the Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith Jr. lineup has played 42 minutes this year. 39 of those have come since Şengün's been down. But in those minutes / 89 possessions per clean the glass, a 136 offensive rating, a 121.1 defensive rating. They have nearly a 31 offensive rebound rate with that group. They do not turn the ball over at all, a 9% turnover rate. And they don't allow offensive rebounds that often either with this group. So that is interesting. Again, it's less the rebound, again, more if team gets shot at the rim, what's happening here with this group. And if they are seeing in extra help in the paint, then those sprays out, those sprays to the corner or out to the perimeter in general, like, you're getting some uncontested looks there. So there are still some things to sort out defensively with that group. But the early returns with Houston have been pretty darn good. So I just wanted to give them a quick salute. So they're making the play-in push. We'll see.
The play-in push. You got them over the Lakers?
I don't. But again, it's close enough to where you have to keep eyes on it. That's all I'm saying.
If you're burying the lead, the Rockets have also won, what, 4 straight road games?
Yeah.
Which that's is very, very important considering they've won 9 total for the year.
They picked the right time to have this kind of run. So just wanted to quickly salute the Houston Rockets.
Okay. Who's got you thinking, bud?
Well, loosely related to the Houston Rockets, I guess the team that is making me think the most would be the Brooklyn Nets right now. As I kind of teased, the Rockets are close enough in the play-in race to, you got to keep eyes on them to see if they can make a run. The Brooklyn Nets starting to fade. They really had an opportunity to make a run, especially directly after, like, Trae Young went down. I have some Atlanta stuff a little bit later, but had an opportunity to close some ground, as did Toronto Raptors, but the Scotty Barnes went out. The Raptors, I think, have lost, like, 7 straight as of recording. The Nets have lost their last 3. They are now 4.5 games behind Atlanta for the 10th seed as of recording, 26-42 overall. I am in a really weird place with Mikal Bridges in particular. And for me, it's been trying to balance what the context is for him offensively, what defenses are doing to him more recently, and how his team has been able to or not been able to capitalize on that. And just general Mikal Bridges is missing the mark in this particular area. Like, if you just look at his post All-Star break numbers, 16.3 points per game post All-Star break, 45% on twos, 34% from 3 on high volume, only getting to the line 3.5 times. Not ideal. More pressing, 31% on mid-range jumpers post All-Star break. And we know how good Mikal generally is on those looks. Whether just pure pull-ups around the elbow or those fading jumpers to his left, he's very comfortable knocking down those shots. The fact that those haven't fallen at all, it's duh analysis here. It stinks that he's not making shots. But just kind of looking at what he's been able to do inside the arc, it just feels like he's not comfortable inside the arc, or has it been post All-Star break. And that's probably the most concerning part for me with him. And, like, just looking at him coming off of a ball screen, getting inside the arc in general. If you are to envision a high pick and roll with Mikal, he's getting drop coverage. He has, let's say, 4 dribbles available to him before this drop turns into a late switch, which teams like to do that to Mikal. It just feels like he's taking 2 dribbles and then getting off of it versus taking that 3rd dribble and either really putting strain on that big or flowing into a more comfortable pull-up jumper for him. And so, like, little process stuff like that has kind of caught my eye. And, like, watching the Spurs game in particular, he's really being bothered as a ball handler. Like, one, I think Trey Jones just deserves a salute, like, despite his size, like, he's a really pesky on-ball defender. But, like, watching him kind of dictate where Mikal gets to go, and Mikal, either because of the handle or because, like, a lot of possessions, Victor Wembanyama's in front of him, and you just don't know how much space you actually have against Wemby. Like, that also factors in. But he just felt unbalanced and unsure. And like, that's what I don't want to see from him. I want to feel like I know what Mikal is trying to get to. If he misses a shot, he misses a shot. But I at least want to know what he's trying to get to. But it feels like he's been leaving a little bit off the table against Drop in particular. It popped in that Spurs game, but it's popped in others as well. But then I go to the other side of the equation. He's been seeing a lot more two on the ball as of late. And some of that is just the opponent. Like when you are facing Orlando and they put Mo Wagner at the level when he's on the floor, or when Wendell's in there. When you're facing Charlotte, we've talked a lot about the Hornets on this podcast and Steve Clifford's belief in being more aggressive defensively generally. So like some of that is just the team we face is aggressive in pick and roll. But I decided to look it up on Second Spectrum earlier today. Before the All-Star break, roughly 1% of Mikal Bridges' pick and rolls were blitzed. Whole lot of drop, whole lot of switches, whole lot of late switches. Since the All-Star break, there have been, I believe, 82 players that have run at least 100 pick and rolls. Only two of them have seen a higher percentage of blitzes than Mikal Bridges. That is a stark difference in what he's seeing. And so I've been trying to hold grace for, he's not used to seeing it to this volume, this level of volume. But I've also felt like he has handled those pretty well. Like as I went through the clips of all of those in particular, it feels like he's getting off the ball when he needs to. And there are many possessions where it gets to the ball, slips the pass into Nick Claxton. Claxton kicks it out to the corner. Shot is missed. That goes down as a zero in terms of the tracking data, and it brings the overall number down. But in terms of process, Mikal did what he was supposed to. Like, I think overall, he's found a nice balance of I see two, I'm getting off of it, either to the relief pass at the wing or hitting the slipping big. If there's anything I want to criticize with Mikal there, is just when he is making the pass to the big in particular, pass placement, pass velocity in particular, is where it's like, you can probably put a little bit more juice on some of these. Because there have been possessions where he's flipping into Nick Claxton. It's a super high, soft pass. Nick catches it, but by the time he catches it, defender's gotten back to him. Because the ball is just too high, too soft. Defense has time to recover. So, like, there's room for betterment there. But overall, like, Mikal's seeing more aggression than he's ever seen. I think he's handling that okay. And so I've been trying to balance the, again, like, that being a positive. And overall, if you do believe in Mikal as a primary option moving forward, if you're in Brooklyn, you want to see him handle pressure well. On the flip side, he also kind of needs to do the things that brought him to the dance. He has to be a better finisher. He has to be a better mid-range scorer. And so that's where I'm just like, how am I like taking all of this in with Mikal?
You just watch the progression of a young player instead of this thing we do with young players where we churn through them with extra quick speed. And now we're talking about Jalen Green a certain light in year X, Cade Cunningham a certain light, Anthony Edwards, Paolo, Mikal Bridges now. We compare them to this player and, oh, now they're not this player that they weren't actually because we didn't give them the chance to grow into this player. Now, actually, they're not very good. Think about where we are at with Mikal Bridges in what, a year span, Nikias?
Yeah.
Because we want to do discourse. We want to have fun with discourse. Woo! Look at this player on the rise. Look, oh, I think he's good. Look how good he is. Oh, he's not good anymore. I have no numbers to support that he's good anymore. So I will be quiet until the numbers come back. These things take time. Context is important. Team structure is important. Growth is important. The funniest part is, as you were mentioning the first part of what you were saying, in my head, I was thinking, this is sometimes what happens. As a player, you get to a certain level and you think to get to the next level, I need to work on X, Y, and Z. I need to work on this mid-range pull-up, or I need to shoot these pull-up threes. And that shot doesn't fall. So now you're trying to figure out how to get to the same shots that you had already done, but you can't always assume success. When you think about it, the first thing that went to my mind when you talked about Mikal and pick and roll and being bothered, think about the fact that now Brooklyn will come up the floor, just throw it to Mikal early in the clock, and he has to wait for a pick and like a big to come set a screen for him. How much did we see that last year?
Didn't feel like very often.
As the starting point. Now, if he was cooking off movement or in transition, then yeah, all of a sudden, yeah, it's different. But now it's like, no, you're good. Go ahead and make these plays. This is part of the growth for a player, for a young player, to where it's not just we think you're a primary option. when the people with the shirts on, with the logos and the polos sit down, they say, we want to take you away. We dive into ways to take you away. And we work to make you uncomfortable. And we try and take away the things you like to do. That's part of it. You have to now search and find it when you have more attention from a defense, when you have more of a focus from a defense, when the driving lanes aren't as clear. Think about what we saw growth-wise from Mikal Bridges. It wasn't just the shooting and the scoring. It's also cutting and screening, being used in different ways. Take a look at the difference in usage from Mikal Bridges from Phoenix to Brooklyn last year to Brooklyn this year. How much does that change?
A good bit.
Is he involved in the same way offensively? Not to say you have to do that to be able to unlock all of what Mikal does. We saw that in the playoff series. When he cooks, but have they strayed away from the entire package? Because, oh, no, you're doing this now. We need you to do this.
Oh, I was just going to say very quickly as I looked it up, 236 on-ball screens set for set by Mikal Bridges this year. That was at 428 last year. So just off of like the early drag stuff that he was doing in Phoenix, volume is just way down on that front. Like, he's naturally taking on more on-ball usage, but continue.
It's a different player. It's a different context. And now you got to figure out, have we overcorrected or have we overpushed into this territory? Not the primary option territory, but this is your specific role for our team. Have we taken things off the table for you? That can happen to where, yes, you have reached a level where we want you to do X, Y, and Z, but we're not letting you do it in the same way. And I'm glad you mentioned the shooting. Like, the scoring's down from Brooklyn. Because last year, Brooklyn, I mean, come on, 26, 47 from the field, 37 from three, 89 from the free throw line. It's pretty good numbers. He's at 20 now for the whole season, down to 43%. Threes are at 36, same volume. So, I mean, that's still there. The assists are up. Got a career high in assists. We don't really talk about that portion of it, do we? That's not really a thing we do.
We should. Like, even during this stretch, 3.9 assists, only 1.6 turnovers. Yeah, there's legitimate good stuff happening with the playmaking portion. And I think it's important growth for him. But it does feel like the lack of scoring and, again, some of the interior, him not being as comfortable inside the arc. Like, I think that's popping louder. Like, understandably so. If he is supposed to be your top scorer or number two when Cam Thomas is there. Like, I understand being frustrated. Why is this guy only averaging 16 points? Like, I don't want to completely discount that portion, but yeah, like, he's also doing other good things.
No, I mean, I mean, last year, the restricted area finishing was at 67%. This year, it's at 62%. I think what you mentioned about the mid-range post-All-Star break was important because you have to remember, last year, he was shooting 45.3% from mid-range. This year, for the whole year, he's at 39%. And so you now have the difference of volume when it comes to those shots. Is he taking more mid-range shots now and missing more? How does that bleed into what shot do I go into? Mm-hmm. And then the other thing for me was whole lot of above the break threes. And he's shooting 35%, but it's on 306 attempts right now, which is changing the shot diet a little bit to a degree. So if we're looking at a scenario where you've now taken your mid-range shots from 20% to like 15% of your attempts, and you're above the break threes over 25% of your attempts, and you're not making those at a high enough clip, it looks different. It feels different. Mm-hmm. So how much of this is, does the context change? How much of this is, do we use them differently? How much is, if it is, does he just more decisive with the shots that he wants to take? Mm-hmm. And does he clean up the shot selection and get back to some of that? Like, how many cuts do we see from Mikal, honestly?
Does it feel like a lot? Because, like, who is he cutting off of to that point? Like, it's a tough context for him.
And it's, like, also choosing when to be aggressive. Like, you mentioned the Spurs game. He's got an opportunity. He drives against Wemby. He pulls it back out. He stays on it and drives again. It's like, well, did we?
You could have. Maybe this is time to swing it to the other side since you have Wemby.
But that's one of those scenarios where I would like people to see the value in what they're doing and see where they can grow as opposed to, well, you're just not this. So off to Jeremy Grant land you go.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say there's a little bit more nuance to be had there. And I just think, like, very quickly on the broader scale, with how this Nets season has gone, with how Mikal has looked post All-Star break, and then in light of, you know, the reporting that the Rockets offered like Jalen Green and then Brooklyn's picks backs or whatever to get Mikal, and Brooklyn's like, nah, actually we're good. Which honestly, I can understand where Brooklyn's like, well, no, actually we're okay. Like, one, we think Mikal is better than Jalen. Two, based on the trades we made with Phoenix and stuff, like, we should still have enough future picks and we have good players on the roster to where if we still believe in Mikal as a foundational piece, in theory, we could trade for somebody else without having to give up Mikal, and we're fine. And then you factor in the contract portion. Mikal's already locked in on a pretty good deal for himself. You would have to pay Jalen almost immediately. Like, he'd be heading into restricted free agency next offseason, I believe. And that dollar amount could end up coming in at a higher number than Mikal just by virtue of the cap goes up, all that good stuff. So I can see why you say no there. But I do wonder if in the building they're like, maybe we could have gotten Jalen all those picks. And maybe he's just getting these reps and we got more picks to play with, all that good stuff. But I wonder if that's just like a thought in the room, not even a full-blown regret, but at least a, we could have thought like 5 more minutes about this before saying no.
I'm not touching that. I'm going to let you cook. I'm going to let Nets fans cook with that. I'm going to let Rockets fans cook with that. Y'all have a blast. Tell me how it tastes. For me, I would just like to see more of a flow for Brooklyn so I can know, okay, Mikal's just not playing at a certain level. Because there's just so many possessions where it's Dennis Schroeder pick and roll, Mikal's on the weak side, they're not even thinking about it. Cam Thomas pick and roll, they're not even thinking about it. So it's like, how many secondary type drive kick plays, skip pass plays is he getting? Not to throw bail, because the numbers are the numbers. The performance isn't at a certain level, but I don't know if that defines him as a player.
Yeah.
I mean, because you look at a player like Brandon Ingram and the growth that he showcased with his shot diet and being able to maintain that shot diet while also adding to his game. These things can happen. You look at DeMar DeRozan, how he's grown and how he can still play at a high level. These things can happen. Zach LaVine, to where he was as a scorer and to a playmaker and to the drives are hitting. Things evolve. Let them evolve, people.
Let them evolve. Hey, Steve, what do you think about Brandon Ingram as a passer?
Gee, I don't know. I wish someone would talk about Brandon Ingram and his playmaking. I think that would be a smart thing to discuss his drives and the impact that they have and his ability to play and pick and roll and make skip passes.
Sadly, we're not going to do that here. Next team that I want to talk about. But no, in all seriousness, I want to quickly salute the Orlando Magic for being very good. But also, I want to salute the Orlando Magic broadcast team because I'm very much about to just steal the Is This Anything section. I want to ask you about 3 teams and some numbers that I found interesting. If that is cool with you.
You got to do the pose, though. If we're going to take, is this anything? There we go. Thank you.
There it is. So, I mentioned a little bit earlier that I had some stuff on Atlanta. Since February 24th, which, you know, we'd say since Trae Young's been out, the Atlanta Hawks are 6-5. They're 14th in offense. Clear dip there. They are 8th in defense per clean the glass. They have the 3rd best pick and roll defense if you look at the all-encompassing any possession that features a pick and roll defended by Atlanta. If you look at the direct number, pick and roll is ran, ball handler shoots, or pass to roller who shoots, or pass to shooter who shoots. They are 1st in points per possession allowed since February 24th. They are switching more often, switching about 24% of pick and rolls. That's down, you know, that's up from 18.7% before Trae went down. What are we taking from the trailer stretch here from Atlanta? Is that anything?
Not that. That wasn't what I was taking from this stretch. What you mean? Now hold on a minute, play. How many games you say?
They're 6-5, so 11 games.
I'm gonna do some quick math. Opponents during that stretch: Orlando, Utah, Brooklyn twice, the Knicks, Cleveland, Memphis, New Orleans, Portland, Utah, the Clippers. That version of the Clippers. It's something. I don't know if it's that thing, but it's something. Like, it's good. It's good that the activity is working and the deep. It's good that they're being decisive, but I don't know if it's. I'm not. Do you try? How many teams you trust? How many teams you want Clint Capela switching against? Be honest.
Not a lot. I mean, here's the thing with where Atlanta is. If they only have to switch against Chicago, and then they might have to switch against whoever's in whoever the 7-8 loser is, you might be able to get away with it for two games. But then they'd have to face Boston, in which that's not going to go the way that you want it to go. So, but yeah, I just wanted to point out Atlanta, they're switching more. Defense seems better overall. Again, the offense is obviously dipped. So it's not like the Hawks are just a much better team without Trey, all that good stuff. So I'm not going that far. But I just wanted to see, like, hey, where are you at on the defense in particular? Because it makes sense without Trey in the lineup that they're able to switch more because they just have bigger bodies in. And they've got good stuff. But again, you brought up the schedule, all the good stuff. So I just wanted to see where you were.
Wait a minute. Nah, Jalen Brunson didn't even play that next game. Nah, I'm changing my vote. No.
Brunson said it means nothing.
It doesn't matter what your PPP is.
Gosh darn it. That is a shot and a half. Okay, let's move on. I'm going to talk about the Denver Nuggets very quickly. 11-2 post-All-Star break. Technically a half game behind OKC, but with the tiebreaker, they're basically a full game back. OKC has the tiebreaker right now. But since the All-Star break, second best pick and roll defense in the league, 0.89 points per possession. They had the fifth best overall defense. We've been talking about Denver's defense throughout the podcast this season, so nothing different there. The more interesting thing for me with Denver's defense, they have the second highest switch rate in the league post-All-Star break. They're switching over 38% of pick and rolls post-All-Star break. Number one, you can guess, it is Brooklyn, switching nearly half, but 46% or whatever. Is this a virtue of some of the teams they face? Do you feel like this is just let's get some more reps in right now during this specific stretch just so we can sprinkle it in throughout the postseason? Has that even registered for you that Denver is switching more?
It feels like playoff prep. More of like, hey, eventually Aaron Gordon at the five will arrive, just so you're aware. Hey, Zeke, can you do some of that just in case we don't want to automatically go to that? We can switch both of y'all. That'd be fantastic. Hey, Jokic, let's try it a couple times, big dog. Why not? Let's just see what a couple of these late switches hit for. So it feels more like experimentation plus let's keep this in our back pocket for the playoff run. Mm-hmm. Because eventually that's what they got to last year. As far as Aaron Gordon, Jeff Green, you will solve the Jokic off the court minutes by switching. So it feels like a recreation point for me.
Okay,
got you. Positive, though. It's positive.
Okay, got you. Last one I have for you. I want to go back to the weekend with the Pelicans getting a crucial win over the Los Angeles Clippers. They closed that game with Brandon Ingram on the floor, Trey Murphy III on the floor, Herb Jones on the floor, Zion on the floor, Larry Nance Jr. on the floor. No CJ, which I found interesting.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're going to sound like the Pelicans fans that was yelling at me this weekend.
Not
you
even
brought
that
to the podcast. That's what you want to do to me?
No,
That's what you want to do to me?
And I will just note that particular lineup, per Clean Glass, has only played 17 possessions this year. So my question is going to be, I have another lineup stat too I get to, but just on that front, was that a one-off, Larry Nance is playing well, CJ hasn't shot well in this one, let's just close with this group, or could you see them tapping into that lineup or just those four, Brandon Ingram, Trey Murphy, Herb, Zion, without CJ, do you see them tapping into that more as the season gets to the postseason?
I mean, I'll take it off just purely CJ. I think it's optionality for the Pelicans in the sense that we have different groups that we feel comfortable closing with depending on the matchup, depending on the scenario. Do we need size? We can now size up a little bit. Do we need to be more switchable or have someone who can do some of the switchy things so it's not just Zion? Or do we need someone who can be active and help if teams are trying to attack Zion? Those kind of things I feel like is a positive for the Pelicans. To have optionality in case, okay, JV's not working at a certain level, we need to go in this direction. Or CJ doesn't have it going, we can still do it in this direction. So, I mean, I wouldn't lock it in as CJ's just not going to close.
Yeah.
But I think it's more of a – and also, you know, if you have a scenario where Trey Murphy is playing well, he may earn the opportunity if he's on one of those heaters. If you have a scenario where Herb Jones plus insert defender here is playing well, they may get themselves in a scenario where you sprinkled enough makes, we need the havoc on the other end. So I think that more speaks to the Pelicans having options than just, it's just not going to be CJ.
Yeah. Makes sense. And then just quickly, just to, I guess, put a bow on like the CJ portion in particular, because I do agree with you overall. Like, I think it's more about the optionality than let's pick on CJ. Like, CJ is the easy one in this case, just because, huh, this is interesting. There's no CJ here. And also just looking at the roster, like, he's the smallest player of that group. So if you do want to size up, then naturally he's going to be the guy. But on the year, 109 possessions with Ingram, Murphy, Jones, and Zion on the floor without CJ, a plus 20.1 net rating in those possessions. Offense, below average, honestly, a 113.8 offense rating, though they have not shot well from three in those lineups, only 30.8% from three in that group. But a 93.7 defensive rating, which really intrigues me on that front. So, again, just wanted to toss it to you to see where you were on that.
I got a question for you.
What's up?
Is that closing lineup better than if you ever were to go CJ, Trey, Brandon Ingram, Herb Jones, and Zion?
I mean, if Zion's going to defend this hard, like that, you might be able to get away with Zion at the five. You know, obviously going to depend on who you're facing, but you may be able to get away with that. And that's a lot of offensive firepower in particular.
I keep keeping Zion at the five in my back pocket. That's one of those things where I can't stand that I caught that game. I feel like it was like a Washington game. They did it for like 4 minutes. And I was like, oh, they're doing the thing. And then I'm like, hey, they're going to do the thing. And everyone's like, no, they're not. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's not fun. And then very quickly before I hand the mic over to you, just want to see how often they've even played that lineup. Per PBP stats, CJ, Brandon Ingram, Zion, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy on the floor together, 34 minutes together on the year. The net rating is not kind, but it's a 34-minute sample, so I want to see what the actual total is. A minus 13 in 34 minutes. The net rating is like a minus 23 or something, but again, it's 34 minutes, so.
Oh, this man.
But they have lost those minutes so far.
That man hit me with tape that for data. All right. Did you have any other instances, anything? Golly.
I'm going to cap it there. Who are some teams that are making you think, Steve?
Well, honestly, I brought up a team that I thought was making you think. Do you have thoughts about the Los Angeles Clippers? Do you have thoughts about the Los Angeles Clippers losing to that version of the Atlanta Hawks at home? Do you want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about it, Nikias? Or you know what we should do? We should just point to all those games where they blew leads and then just cap it there. Dealer's choice. Which one do you want to do?
I see what you're doing. I think with the Clippers, I wonder how much of it is just weird February, March, and them kind of having to prove it stretch earlier on that got them into like the top three spots and just like, okay, let's just make sure we're healthy now. Which I would understand if that's what they got to, but it's also a bit of an indictment. Like, didn't y'all make a whole thing about caring about the regular season, and now y'all have this really, really positive stretch, and it's like, now we good. We'll just tap into it when we need to. Like, if that's the thing, it kind of goes both ways for me. In terms of like what I'm actually noticing with the group, like I remain very frustrated by their transition defense, and like that's just something that has to be cleaned up. It doesn't matter who's playing, if you have Harden out, if you have Kawhi out or whatever, like that just has to be cleaned up. Like in most cases, I mean, Zoo's the biggest guy in your rotation. I can understand him. He's going to be in the paint. He can try to crash or whatever. Like send another guy at maximum if you want to crash. If you have a favorable lineup, small guy on, insert big wing here, and you want to crash off in the glass. But like just get back. I feel like that solves so many of their issues defensively. If you look at like the overall defensive rating, post All-Star break, and all that good stuff. Literally get back on defense. And I think they'd be okay. Like, that part bothers me. And I guess to the offensive side, before I let you go, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm talking a lot. But to the offensive side, like, just keeping an eye on just keeping an eye on James Harden in general. I don't want to.
We're back. We're so back.
Don't do me like this, man.
What
like
you mean? It's not my fault that every time we go, you hit the James Harden button. What you want me to do? All I can do is point it out.
James Harden has been very good for this season. I've made cases here, and also like when we did the episode with JJ, like, hey, we should probably at least keep an eye on Harden for like an All-Star spot. He ultimately didn't make it. all that good stuff. But like James Harden has been very good on balance. I do not want to take that away from him. I will say, like, if I've felt more and more games recently with the Clippers where he's not getting into the pick and roll as quickly as he was. It's feeling a little bit more pound heavy for him. And then there is just the general, if we are actually going to press the Nikias button, how many shots is he taking at the rim? How often is he touching the paint? If we are going to, if we're going to tap into that portion, like, I do think it's at least worth acknowledging. That part hasn't super been there as of late. And if the floater isn't going to go down to the same degree, then the middies aren't hitting like that either. It's a heh. I think, again, obviously he's still really good. The organization that he brings to the offense is still very valuable. Him having the ball in general gets Paul George Kawhi off of it, and you can set up different things from there. So, like, I'm not arguing he's a net negative or anything to the sort. But if he is going to have the ball, like, they do need to get into their actions earlier. Like, we've literally seen it, so he can do it. Get into the actions earlier. And then as a scorer, he's going to have to put pressure on defenses, especially as we move into the postseason. He's going to have to do damage inside the arc too. Whether that's just a pure pull-up or a step-back midi, but that's the floater, getting all the way to the rim and drawing fouls. Like, he is going to need for that portion to perk back up. So those would be my Clipper thoughts as of late.
Okay. Well, would you like to go down the rabbit hole that Steve went down too early in the morning? Because hashtag my mind was restless and I saw a tweet that made me upset.
Ah, sure.
Which, brief also side quest, side note, y'all are doing way too much NIT discourse. It's like more NIT discourse than the prep for the actual NIT, which I realize has been like 16 years since I played in that. I'm old. Anyways, so the Clippers for the season, 5th in offensive rating, 14th in defensive rating. Post All-Star break, 10th in offensive rating, 25th in defensive rating. So your offense has taken a hit and your defense is taking a dive, and that can't be the formula. But I tie it back to the Clippers' overall context, in which this stretch would usually be most of the season for the Clippers.
Yeah.
In which we're waiting for them to hit it. We've already seen the high notes. So there's that in the back of your brain mixed with this. And how much of this is March, weird February, injuries in and out, or hey, the Clippers have an issue. Or if they don't hit these notes, they can't win. I think that's a real portion of the game and evaluating it to where, yes, these teams are good, but they are good for a reason. Mm-hmm. You have to evaluate a team when they can't hit those marks and how do they react? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If a team is great defensively and the defense isn't the same and they can't survive, well, put that in the bank. Well, if they can't get stops, they're in trouble, which seems like dumb analysis. Duh, scoring is important, but you know what I mean.
No, I get what you're saying.
For the season, and I noticed this real quick, right? 18th in points in the paint. Post-All-Star break, they're 21st in points in the paint. For the season, they're 10th in points off turnovers. Post-All-Star break, they're 26th in points off turnovers. For the season, they're 13th in opponent points in the paint. Post-All-Star break, they're 19th. For the season, 11th in opponent points off turnovers, 23rd post-All-Star break.
That's a problem.
So there is a dip here. There's a dip here as far as some of the things. We're not getting easy ones. We're giving up easier ones. That tilts the context. That tilts the formula. Their losses that they have post-All-Star break, OKC, Sacramento, the Lakers, the Bucks twice, Minnesota, the Pelicans, and the Hawks. Now, I'll throw a little bit of a caveat out there. Some of that could have been expected if we paid attention. Because, like, I think there's only 3 times this year they swept back-to-backs. Mm-hmm. They've had 4 back-to-backs post-All-Star break. So when you throw
I was about to say, like, I think they've, if I remember the tweet correctly, I can't remember who tweeted out, but I think the Clippers have played 6 games in the last 9 days. Some of that is just we are tired, and this is an older group, which is why I don't suggest anyone should just press the big red button for this stretch. There's enough conceptual here. It's like, let's keep an eye on this. At the very least,
I think the biggest thing is the question mark is like, I went from, hey, the Clippers have more teams they have to worry about in the West than Denver, to, hey, what's going on with the Clippers? I think one thing that stands out to me is you can just feel, you mentioned it, the offense hasn't had some of that same movement and some of that same tempo. They've had the same concepts, but they're back into that slower grind, start with 15, one screen, maybe we get to a second screen, now it's cook time, which we saw can have success at times, but if that's your base, that could be an issue. Mm-hmm. The defense, you're seeing them work for the rotations. You're seeing some of these breakdowns. Are we switching? Are we not switching? Which coverage is our big in? Oh, yeah, we have three bigs. Which bigs are we playing? We're rotating out of it because we have the personnel, but those rotations are a little slower. We're in rotation a little bit more than we want to be. We don't have the same juice. And I will say, even widening out past the Clippers, this is part of the program. Like, you learn who you are as a team. You try to get to the best version of your team. It's not always linear. Like, sometimes the mind is there, the bodies aren't. You have to figure out how to navigate those parts of the season. But that's where having a base is important. And that's where it's like, okay, we know what the Clippers can get to. It's on them to get back to it. Because ultimately, you know what your good is. You know what your bad is. You know what your flaws are. You're trying to work through them. You're trying to disguise while a whole other team is trying to hit those same notes. It's tough. I think if they get back to playing, get out of starting sets later in the clock, get back to moving when they get two on the ball and making teams pay, I think they'll be fine. Another thing that stood out to me real quick, or two, they're third in the league in three-point percentage, right, Nikias?
Mm-hmm.
They're at 38.6 for the year. Post-All-Star break, they're shooting 35.7% from three.
Not going to get it done, especially taking when you don't get to the rim that often.
You're taking a dip there. The last two games, we mentioned Atlanta, 28 made field goals, 17 assists for the Clippers. At New Orleans, 37 made field goals, 18 assists for the Clippers. They are averaging 24.3 assists per game post-All-Star break. That's a lot closer to the 23.2 they average in losses for the season. So I just think it's balancing things and getting back to your profile is probably going to be the most important thing for them. And then just getting their lineups back in order. Because ending the quarter with Kawhi, Zubac, Terrence Mann, Amir Coffey, and Bones feels a little different. Starting the quarter with James Harden, PJ Tucker, Amir Coffey, Bones, and Daniel Tice feels a little different. So I think it's a lot of what we talked about before for the Clippers now creeping back up at a not ideal time.
Yeah. Now, I have to say very quickly, it's not his fault just because of the injuries and stuff like that. These Daniel Tice plus PJ front court minutes are, hey man, it's not fair to insert star hero that's in with those two. You just don't have room. And it's just two very obvious help points while there. And again, like, it's not, some of this, we just kind of have to find minutes because a lot of guys are out. But if we're just talking about what's contributed to some of this wonkiness for them offensively and stuff like that during this recent stretch, like, that's part of it. That's all I got.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Sure.
Quick free throw.
What you got?
Marcus Morris or PJ Tucker?
I don't know if you're going to like my answer. I ain't going to hold you. We'll see. I think the Clippers would probably rather have Marcus Morris at the four than PJ.
All right.
All right.
Moving right along. Hey, Nikias, what did you think of Cade Cunningham's late game shot against the Miami Heat?
I don't know what he was doing.
He told you what he was doing, but go ahead.
When you don't have a shot clock and the game is tied, you need to win that game or you need to be prepared to play five more minutes. And for him to take that shot with that much time on the clock in a tie basketball game, that bothered me. And you know, as I am Mr. Process guy, even if he hit that shot, I would have been like, hey, that's cool. Why on earth did you take this with this much time on the clock? So I don't mind the shot that Cade took. I don't mind Cade as a concept saying, I am ending this. When you don't have a shot clock, you can't take that with that much time on the clock. Especially since it was that shot. It'd be one thing if he just like beat Caleb Martin off the bounce and got to the rim and missed. I still wouldn't want him to go that early, but at least, okay, you took a shot there and missed. The type of shot it was, he literally could have just got that whenever he wanted to, I feel like. You have to end the game or go to overtime there.
Now, here's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, when these conversations come up, we get ourselves into like a lot of hypothetical land, which I don't love. It's not my favorite thing to do. Mm-hmm. I do think Monty Williams told the truth and y'all didn't like some of it. You specifically would have been on the process no matter what. But there's a lot of folks, if Cade Cunningham had hit that shot to put the Pistons up and they end up winning that game, they would be like, Cade Cookingham or something. I don't know, whatever the kids say these days, they would have let that fly. And then once I kind of heard what Cade said, and this is not me saying I agree with the shot, but you got to live with some of these shots they take. Hey, man, I got to be better, but I thought they was going to double. And I go back earlier. I think the Pistons were down two. Mm-hmm. Cade's like, okay, it's time to boogie, baby. And Bam Adebayo is literally just lurking, staring at this man to the point where I'm like, oh, my God, he's about to hit at any point. He didn't, ultimately. Cade was able to turn the corner and got a layup. But you factor that in.
Yeah, but to your point, like Miami had been trapping a lot of Cade pick and rolls, like on that game and in the game that they played on, what, Friday? So like that has just been part of calculus with the Heat against Cade in particular. So like that, there is some credence there. Not that now, he needs me to verify what he said, but you get what I mean.
No, you're good. You're good. Now, this ties into a whole bunch of things. Depending on where you land and how you feel, it could change a thing. Monty let them play. He could have called timeout, right? Mm-hmm. Let him play. Let him cook. Trust the players. Now, if he had not trusted the players and called timeout, they ran a set, Miami gets set, and they get a stop, how do you feel? Who are you pointing at? Mm-hmm. If Cade didn't, you know, if he did hold it, but he still ends up with the same look, how would you feel? How much of it is based on the result, I guess, is the thing for me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, honestly, we should probably, instead of yelling about this kind of stuff, give Martin a hat tip for his stunt. And the timing of that stunt. Because Cade was in rhythm. Mm-hmm. And then Martin was like, hey, Big Dog, just so you know, I'm here. In case you want to do another through the legs and go this way, I'm here. And Cade opted to just go for the shot. Now, was it early? Absolutely. I'm not gonna be that guy and be like, no, it was. But that's the price. When guys are gonna take those type of shots, they're gonna take them. And he'll learn from this moment. We've seen it before. I mean, hell, I'm old enough to remember when they called Magic Johnson Tragic Johnson for like a year plus.
But this is after he won titles, right? Unforgiving crowd. I'll tell you what.
And it's just like, you know, I get it. Very early on the clock, but I get it.
Yeah. That's. Yeah, he'll be all right, which, you know, sicko of me. But, like, I really enjoyed the Heat Pistons two-game series over the weekend. That was some good stuff. Bam and Jalen Duren going after it. Like, it was neat.
Now, the funniest thing is if Cade goes off against Boston.
I mean, didn't Detroit already almost beat him? No, I guess, wait, that was without Cade, though, wasn't it? Wasn't that while he was out and that was the whole... Hey, the Pistons look like this while Cade's out, et cetera. There's been so much discourse on the Pistons this year. For a team that's that low in the standings, all due respect, there's been a lot of conversation about how we're supposed to think about this team. This is, yeah, that's, I suppose that is that. Do you have any other teams?
Nah. Nah, do you have any players you want to shout out?
Yeah, very quickly. Funny enough, let me start the bidding with Bam Adebayo, who had the 5-game point against OKC. And, like, again, someone to watch threaded that whole game and stuff. Like, Bam was, he just could not hit shots. It was just a very weird Bam game, which, newsflash, it is as frustrating as it is. I don't want to take frustration away from people. Literally every player in the NBA has a bad game. Like, literally yesterday, I tweeted out, this feels like one of the worst Jokic games of the season. I was talking about this in the watch party, but I'll bring it here, too. When Shea played the Pacers, like, a week or so ago, that felt like one of the worst defensive performances from him in the year. Like, just a bad Shea game. Like, these things happen. He did not have it against OKC. But since then, he's averaging 19 and 14, still in the half, 1.3 blocks in that stretch. Over his last three games, 17 and 13 against Denver, really good defense against Jokic, trend continued in which Miami defended Denver well, / Denver couldn't hit shots, but it didn't matter because the Heat just couldn't score to save their lives. So that's a whole other thing. But 22 and 9, couple of assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks against Detroit on Friday. If you have League Pass, and if you like Bam Adebayo, or if you're on defense about Bam Adebayo, or you kind of look at people that talk about his ceiling and be like, wait, what are you talking about? Watch the second quarter of that game. If you want to just fast forward to the Bam portion, he checks back in at 10:06 after Jaden Ivey knocks down a free throw. watch from 10:06 to the end of the second quarter. In that stretch, we get a tip slam off of a Patty Mills missed three. He hits a trail three. He hits a turnaround hook over Jalen Duren. He traps Cade Cunningham on a pick and roll, gets back out. It's a switch where I think Jalen Duren tries to post up Jimmy. Jimmy pokes the ball away. Bam gets it. Bam goes coast to coast and gets an and one. They originally called offensive foul. They rightfully changed it because it wasn't an offensive foul. Let the dude get a bucket. So he has that. Another defensive possession where Jaime's trying to blitz. He's out of position. Or rather, Detroit tries to run like flex action. He gets caught up on the screen, so Jaime's just out of position. Bam cleans that up. It's an ISO for Cam, for Cade versus Bam. Bam shuts him down, forces a miss. On the other end, Cade is matched up with him, so he seals him off, gets a dunk in transition. That happens. Just in that four-minute stretch, the Heat go from down 33-32 to up 48-40. Just in that 4 minutes. And then later in the quarter, like, he puts Jalen Duren underneath the basket. There's, like, another putback thing. Like, Bam was just incredible in that stretch. So I really had fun with that one. And then naturally on Sunday, 20-17, he hits the game-winning three. Cashed it clean. Which, 3 of 3 from three over his last three games? That's a lot of threes, but yeah, Bam's just taking the ball to break threes now. So that's neat. We'll see if that continues. So I wanted to give the salute to Bam, bouncing back after honestly just a weird stretch from him offensively, but he seems to be gaining rhythm. Like, I guess you can put the salt in with him facing the Pistons, but stylistically, a matchup that, you know, gives him trouble. Like, Jalen Duren's a pretty athletic big, all that good stuff. Detroit likes to switch quite a bit, so conceptually, you can see where it could get dice for Miami's offense. But Bam did the thing there. Who else do I want to shout out? Jamal Murray. Talked a little bit about Denver's defense. I want to just give a quick salute to Jamal Murray's defense. When he is engaged and locked in, like, that is, he's a technically a small guard, but like, he is a bigger guard though. So still smallest guy on the court, but you can't just bully him. Like, go back to the Celtics game, which was a very fun one. Watching him matched up against Jason Tatum, drawing an offensive foul, getting another stop there. Getting Kristaps on some post-ups, poking the ball away, forcing a miss. Like, he battles. And then there was a play in the Dallas game on Sunday where they were trapping Luka Doncic in pick and rolls, a slip pass to Daniel Gafford. Jamal Murray just meets him at the rim and forces a jump ball. I'm just like, hey, man, that's all right. That is all right. So he's been getting after it. And then went looked up some numbers post-All-Star break. On any possession featuring an isolation defended by Jamal Murray, opponents are generating 0.79 points per possession. That's around the same range as Bam Adebayo at 0.77 and Derek White at 0.79. When attacking Jamal Murray on a post-up, 0.895 points per possession, which is the literal exact number as Chet Holmgren post-All-Star break, which is fun. Same amount of possessions and everything. And then if you want to give a quick hat tip to the offense, 73 points in the fourth quarter post-All-Star break. 50% of his twos, he's shooting 60% from three. Like, good luck. And then you get into the usage of him on and off the ball. Like, it's just a lot of fun. A quick salute to Rui Hachimura as a cutter and as an off-ball screener. He has 76 points on cuts this year per synergy. He had 89 all of last year. We got a lot of games to go, so I would imagine he's just going to set the career high there. But I appreciate, like, you're seeing growth with him in terms of off-ball field. And I have been kind of trying to figure out how much of this is him just getting better versus I am playing alongside LeBron James, incredible passer, D'Angelo Russell, incredible passer. If I cut anywhere, like, there are some passes available to me that just wouldn't be available elsewhere. So, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how much of it is his growth, but he has gotten better. So I wanted to give the quick salute there. And then finally, Delano Banton in Portland, former Raptor, former Celtic, all that good stuff. Last 10 games, which includes 7 starts, 18 points per game, 5 boards, nearly 4 assists. He is shooting 41% from 3 on over 6 attempts. I'm glad that the jumper is starting to come around for him because, like, that felt like the biggest question mark, like, as a genuine bigger guard. Like, he feels more like just wing that can handle versus, like, true point guard. But either way, 6'8 with legit ball handling chops, you try to figure out what is the burst and handle like, but ultimately, what is the jumper going to be if he's not going to be a primary? As he's knocking down shots, like, he's been better and more valuable off the ball, being able to attack closeouts. If the defense is tilted, he can beat you there. So I just wanted to give a quick salute there. Like, he's been playing well. Matisse knocking down threes and flying around defensively. DeAndre Ayton has come back like a man on a mission, so I do want to give him a quick hat tip as well. Just keeping eyes on Portland in general. Tumani Kamara continues to defend well. So we will cap it there. Did you have players you want to shout out?
Just a couple. Mike Conley, prior to Monday's game at Utah. Mike Conley, back-to-back 20-point games for Mike Conley. Back-to-back games with 5 or more made threes. his first 20-plus point game of the season, first time scoring 20 in consecutive games as a Minnesota Timberwolf. Dang. The Wolves are 19-4 this season when Mike Conley hits three or more threes in a game. Just wanted to point that out. CJ McCollum did have a big game against Portland, 38 assists, 12 of 20 from the field, 6 of 12 from three against the Blazers over the weekend. This season, Nekias, the New Orleans Pelicans are 20-2 when CJ McCollum scores 20 or more points. The New Orleans Pelicans are 18-4 when CJ McCollum has 5 or more assists. The New Orleans Pelicans are 12-0 when CJ McCollum has 20-plus points and 5-plus assists.
Seems like an important barometer. CJ McCollum remains important.
I throw that out there for you. And then Ayo Dosunmu, just wanted to salute him. He's continued to step up and grow offensively for this Bulls team. So 34-9 against Washington. Very, very positive stuff. Hey, Nekias.
What's up?
Guess what, buddy?
What up?
I got a couple free throws.
Okay.
Then we can get out of here.
Okay.
So today you tweeted, every game I'm getting closer to pressing the if Denver is only going to get one all defense rep, if that, it should go to Aaron Gordon button. What happened to KCP?
I say I'm getting closer. KCP remains very, very good.
Okay.
It's going to KCP, I feel like, has been Denver's best defender overall, but it's like Aaron Gordon's inching closer to that. And then, like, as I was looking up stuff for, like, the Jamal Murray section and stuff, I was like, wait a minute, man. Aaron Gordon's popping up higher on a lot of these. And it's just that, you know, adding, like, the numbers to, like, what I've been seeing. So that's when I was like, huh. It might just end up swinging the Gordon by the end of the year.
Okay. Is this like that one year you made the all-star push for Darius Garland and Fred VanVleet in, like, the same business week?
They were both worthy of all-star consideration. What you mean?
Is Jalen Williams a top 20 player?
Oh, man. I can't get there.
Okay.
I respect the thought.
Okay.
I do think, like, as I was, like, reading through those mentions and stuff, I do feel like some people just kind of just undersold Jalen completely. Like, I don't think that portion is fair. Like, as I started listening out players, though, I'm like, okay, he's probably, like, closer to, like 31, 32, somewhere in there versus, like, pure 20. But it's also a testament to how well Jalen's played that he's even in this conversation. I know the person that gave that opinion in particular watches a bunch of basketball. So, like, I don't put him in the let me throw something out here for nonsense category. So I respectfully disagree.
Why did Grady and Anthony do that?
Because they're actually young.
Okay.
And they can get away with that. I'll end it here. So for the people that are, like, in my age range and older, I'm starting to get a little uncomfortable with how often these jokes are being made. Like, I get the first time or even the second time. If it's going to be a thing literally every time Grady does something on a basketball court, like, at a certain point, like, we are past, like, we got to be for real. Like, you're just not getting, I'll lean into the point, you're not getting a 100% hit rate on this. We, like, at a certain point, like, let the dude play basketball.
Well, since you went on a rant, how'd you feel about that Kenny Pickett trade? There we go. That's what I was looking for.
Thanks for watching the pod. I'm Nekias. He's Steve. Subscribe to the channel. I'm just kidding. Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast audio-wise, you can find us. Naturally, we are on JJ Reddy's YouTube channel every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. So if you aren't subscribed to JJ Reddy's YouTube channel, please do so. We're here every Tuesday, but there's a whole lot of fun content on the channel overall. So check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at NekiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. More importantly, if you have a League Pass account, watch basketball with us. Come hang with us via Watch Playback. We're watching Hoops live. We're breaking it down live. Come rock with us. It's free to make a profile. No shenanigans needed. The link to the room is hyperlinked in the podcast description, both audio-wise and if you're watching this on YouTube, just click the info button. You'll see it there. Click on that link. Create your profile. It's free. Again, if you have a League Pass account, you can watch games live with us. We're breaking things down. If we have fourth quarter or overtime antics, we got Steve breaking down why a play did or didn't work. And in general, it's a safe space for you to rant about life, your job, whatever the case may be. If you have a basketball question, you can toss it to us. We have a lot of fun in there. Also, a whole lot of wrestling references. So if that's your thing, you will enjoy your time in the Dunker Spot Watch Party Room. So come rock with us. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Hey, good show, Nikias. Hey, Nikias, what'd you think of a Richard Jefferson in Cleveland?